Well, author John Miller has taken a shot at re-emphasizing the importance of small towns with a new book that looked at the impact that boys from Midwestern towns have had on the nation. From Walt Disney to Johnny Carson, from Lawrence Welk to Bob Feller and Thomas Hart Benton, Miller tells the stories of how small towns help these boys realize their dreams. John Miller is the author of many books, including this latest one, Small Town Dreams, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. He speaks tonight at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. And John Miller, so good to have you here. Welcome to Up to Date.
Very good to be here. Thank you.
Well, why the exclusive focus on boys?
You know, I get that question asked. It's often the first one.
I can only imagine you do.
Well, I'd been thinking about this book for a long time. I'm actually a small town boy from Missouri, mainly. Grew up in four towns here, or went to the University of Missouri and so forth. And I'd been thinking about this for a long time. But I really, as a professor at South Dakota State University, got interested in the subject of community. Mm-hmm. And wrote an article about Laura Ingalls Wilder and community.
You've written a book about her, about that,
well,
too.
Well, yeah. I wrote one book, and then the University of Missouri asked me to write a biography, and I did. And then I wrote another book of essays. So I spent probably 15 years of my life in a relationship with a woman, not my wife, as I like to joke. But so it's really about community. It's about small towns. It's about how we live together with each other. And, you know, after writing these three books on Laura Ingalls Wilder, I really wanted to deal with a large number of individuals over a period of time, about a century, and from Ohio to Kansas, Nebraska, and the Dakotas, the 12 states of the Midwest. Mm-hmm. And to have included men and women in the book would have certainly diluted it. And the book already is 440 pages of text, 528 pages altogether with notes and index.
Diluted it how? I mean,
well, in the sense that, I started out with a list of 35 names or so, and I actually wrote chapters on people like Harry Truman from Independence here, and Eisenhower, and Charles Lindbergh.
You had to jettison a few of them.
And I had to jettison a few of them. I'm a very long-winded guy. I'm giving you a long answer to a short question here already. You can see where I'm going, that I just didn't think I could do full justice to my subject that way. And I thought, after all, I'm a guy. I think I maybe understand guys better than women, although I wrote three books about a woman, right, and her daughter, Rose Wilder Lane. So, you know, that's my answer to that. I gave my full shot at it for a decade and a half on women. So here's my chance to talk about a subject and subjects that I was totally fascinated with of these characters.
There is a sense, John, that, you know, small towns, Midwestern small towns, creates a certain kind of person, you know, wholesome and honest and and trustworthy and and dutiful and hardworking and all those kinds of things.
Exactly.
Is that true? I mean, is that part of your premise here or not?
Not really. Now, I do have a hypothesis, and I've heard this from any number of people. You know, like employers from outside the Midwest love Midwesterners because they show up for work on Monday morning. They are hardworking. They're dutiful. They're persistent. And I think that one could make a case for it. But I leave that to the sociologists, to the empirical investigators, to the surveys that might be done. I'm not here to try to prove that Midwesterners are one thing or another. The first chapter in the book about Frederick Jackson Turner, you know, Turner made a name for himself by glibly attaching these kinds of qualities to Midwesterners. I think they may or not be true, but one thing I know is true, and that is what this book is all about, is that having grown up in a small town or on a farm in the Midwest had a huge, huge impact in a variety of different unpredictable ways on these 22 boys who later became men.
You talk about in the book the loss of a sense of place in this country, that we've lost that feeling. What are you talking about there, and what exactly has been lost?
You know, I grew up in six small towns, Kansas, Missouri, and Illinois, and one suburb of Chicago. And I think my experience in Chicago, which in many ways was good, I had a wonderful high school, Arlington Heights High School. Good education. I enjoyed playing baseball. I enjoyed caddying. I enjoyed the environment. But, you know, every time I go back to visit my brother in the Chicago area and get on those freeways and get in those traffic jams, you know, what you have in small towns are unique places. You know, they're not all McDonald's and they're not all the Burger Kings. They have the local eating places. You have a feel, a sense for the environment. You're close to nature, you're close to the land, and that's what I'm talking about. I think anybody who's been to small towns and to the city kind of understands what I'm talking about.
Well, one person who understands it is a guy named Johnny Carson, the great late-night talk show from Norfolk, Nebraska. He said this about small-town living, and this is right from your book, John. Mm-hmm. There's a great advantage, Johnny Carson once said, to growing up in a community where you feel comfortable. Mm-hmm. There was a closeness, a security there that I still miss. I had a typical small-town Midwestern boyhood up in Norfolk, Nebraska. What did you learn about Johnny Carson by traveling to Norfolk, Nebraska?
Well, that's interesting. Carson was actually the first chapter I did, although I had done some research previously on Meredith Willson and others. When I went on sabbatical in 1999 and 2000, I went down to North Fork, as they will remind you it's called. Spent 4 days there, and in hanging around town for that time, I talked to about a half dozen of his former classmates and the guy who, Jerry Hughes, who became the publisher of the newspaper in town. And they told me, you know, what it was like to live in that town. He worked as an usher. He was there in Pearl Harbor and told the people as they went out, yeah, we're going to be at war. He went down to the Black Bridge, hung out with his guys, hung from the girders as trains passed overhead. Yeah. And he just had that. It's as much the kind of community and the friendships that are organized in a town as the physical places where this kind of interaction occurs.
You know, I love this story about him commandeering the PA system at school one day to announce an assembly that wasn't really scheduled. What did he do at the assembly that Johnny Carson called for once he grabbed the microphone and spoke to the rest of the school?
Well, he got them all together, and he did some of his magic tricks. When he was 12 years old, he had written off for Hoffman's Book of Magic, and for the next half dozen years, all he was ever doing was practicing his card tricks, and he became a performer.
Yeah, and I love what a teacher said of him in your book, because I thought this was such an apt description of Johnny Carson. The teacher said of him, he wasn't so much rowdy as he was full of life. Yeah, and I thought, boy, that really fits my sense of who that man was, having read a little bit about him.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, he wasn't a bad kid, but he did the kinds of things that get normal teenage boys into trouble. And that's one thing that small towns, having growing up in them myself, you know, they give you a certain amount of opportunity to do things that if you were in a city, in an anonymous city where that policeman doesn't know what you're doing, we know what happened over in St. Louis a few days ago, we know some of the surface features. And, you know, in a small town, that might not have happened.
You know, the stereotype of the Midwesterner, again, to go back to that, John, is that of someone who's not all that complicated. But boy, Johnny Carson was a complicated guy.
He was, you know, and as a historian, I'm very much into complexity, irony, you know, paradox. He was a complicated guy, and the image that we got on television, and I watched him right up to his last show in 1992, virtually every night, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, friendly, small town. It's like you're hanging around the hot stove.
Yeah.
But once that TV monitor went off, he could be very closed and even cruel to people that certainly not friendly to people he didn't know.
We're visiting with author John Miller about his new book, Small Town Dreams, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. John, let's turn to some Midwestern boys with connections from our two states.
Sure.
Thomas Hart Benton from Neosho down in the southwest corner of Missouri, with ties to Kansas City, obviously his home is here for many years. He was known as a regional painter, but that's a term he didn't like. Why not?
He didn't. Well, you know, in the 1930s, these regionalist painters, Benton, Wood, and Curry, got associated as just being, you know, provincial guys who are painting their own Midwest, and therefore
they were lesser somehow.
They were lesser somehow. But as Benton pointed out, no. I'm interested in regionalism, but I've been all over the country, and every summer, actually, he'd go out with his sketchbook and visit different parts of the country. So he was interested in the Midwest, but he was also interested in other sections and regions of the country.
Why did you include Thomas Hart Benton in this book?
Why did I?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I've been asked, why do you put these people in it? I said, he was a no-brainer. I just had to talk about the Midwestern regionalists who, after all, were focusing a lot of their interest on small towns. I wanted to put some artists in it, and these men are remembered as the key movement in American art, the distinctive movement during the 1930s. And I just love Thomas Hart Benton, although I know he could be cantankerous and mean-spirited sometimes, not always the nicest guy in the world, but he was always full of life and wonderfully creative person as well as
artist. If our listeners haven't been to his home over in the Valentine neighborhood, yes, or near that anyway, it's a wonderful place to visit just a great refuge, and you can really see the man at work in that setting. We've done shows from over there,
And I remember, one thing, he's kind of a model in the sense that he was working right up to the very end. 85 years old, he was painting, I think, a history of country music, and he told his wife that he was going to go out and check it, and he was out a little longer than she thought. He had seen it, decided it was done, written his name on it, T.H. Benton, I guess, and fell over and was lying on it. He was working right up to the last minute.
Wow. How about Walt Disney? Yes. People think he was born in Kansas City, but he wasn't.
Right. No.
You cite the influence on Walt Disney, not of Kansas City, but of tiny Marceline, Missouri,
yes,
where Walt lived from ages 5 to 9. And these were very influential years for Walt Disney. What happened to him in Marceline up there in northern Missouri?
He remembered Marceline, a little town, 4,000 people or so when he was there, in a farm right on the northern edge of town. So fondly, I think, because he didn't remember his first years in Chicago. He was too young.
Mm-hmm.
And his days in Kansas City, in some ways a typical schoolboy, because his father, Elias, had him delivering 700 newspapers in the morning.
The Kansas City Star and the Kansas City Times. He was a working kid.
He was a working kid. And his dad, was not a very nice guy in some ways. And so his time spent here was sort of drudgery. So he remembered with great fondness those years when he could be a kid roaming through the woods, going into town, sometimes seeing some shows in the movie theater and so forth. And he just had these fond, nostalgic memories that bubbled up when he was in his 40s, and they became the inspiration for his developing Disneyland.
I was going to say, that's just the connection here, and people don't realize that Marceline, Missouri,
right,
became the inspiration for something as remarkable as Disneyland.
Yes, and it worked out very well. I had thought about this from the beginning, but we have a photograph, a colored photo. It was obviously originally a black and white, but somebody colored it on the cover of the book of Main Street Marceline. Mm-hmm. Around the time he was there, I think about 1907, 1909, and that, while not replicated exactly in both Disneyland and Walt Disney World, was the inspiration for what so many millions of people have experienced. Listening to the program right now, too, I'm sure.
What's that town like today?
Well, my wife and I actually came through there. We came down to the Lake of the Ozarks here 2 years ago to celebrate our 40th wedding anniversary. Our kids thought we ought to do that, and we came down through central Iowa and central Missouri, stopped in Marceline, sat down on Main Street, talked to a few people. It's a relatively healthy town as towns go. It has a large printing company that I think must employ a lot of people on the south end of town. And it certainly is not what it was.
Can you see Walt Disney in that town today, or is it too many years past?
There's a Walt Disney School. There's the railroad depot that is still there, a big two-story brick depot. There's a museum there that you can go to. And, Disney is visible in the town.
John Miller is our guest. He's the author of Small Town Dreams, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. He'll be speaking this evening at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the branch downtown, 14 West 10th Street. That's the central branch. You can RSVP now and grab a seat by going to kclibrary.org. That's at 6:30 tonight at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library. Sam Walton of Walmart fame, right. John, he spent some important years at the University of Missouri, which I hadn't realized. I'm wondering why you picked him, because in introducing him in the book, you quote an editorial from the Columbia newspaper when Sam died back in 1992 that said Sam Walton and his imitators, quote, have probably done more than anything to destroy the small town America that he loved.
Well, you know, there are a number of controversial characters in this book. I mean, you talk about Henry Ford, you talk about Ronald Reagan, you talk about a lot of them. And, you know, we have a Walmart in our town of Brookings. I just went to a wall on my early morning walk. I went to the Walmart over by Blue Ridge Mall this morning. Mm-hmm. Walton was a business genius. He was an all-American kid who was into everything, athlete and everything else. He was a remarkable person. The reason he had to be in this book, it was a no-brainer, was those Walmart stores were all located originally in small towns, places that the other big box retailers shunned because they didn't think that it was going to be profitable. But in 1962, the year I graduated from Monette High School, by the way, it was Walmart, it was Kmart, it was Shopko, and it was Target that all got started. His timing was exquisite on this thing. And the controversy, which continues today, you can see it in newspapers all over the country about new Walmart locations. We got a new one in Sioux Falls going in right now, Sioux Falls, South Dakota, is what impact it has on the small towns. And obviously, there are two sides to the story, and if I were to try to go into detail on what all the arguments were, that would have taken my whole chapter.
I love this little detail you had about him in the book, that at Columbia, when he was going to school there, he said he probably knew more students than anybody else on campus. I mean, why? What was that all about?
Well, he was the kind of person, you know, if he were in your high school, he'd be pictured on the most likely to succeed. he was a star athlete. He was a debater, a thespian. He was a pretty good student. He had this drive. He had this drive to succeed. He had he was an entrepreneur, and he decided that he wanted to make friends. You know, Dale Carnegie personified, and he decided he'd go say hello to everybody he met on the street. And, you know, I graduated from the University of Missouri 1966, 26 years later, and I was there when they unveiled the QEBH. A lot of people out there, you know, these were the big men on campus. I was not a big man on campus. He was a big man on campus, and now, you know, he's a big man in the history books.
Also in this book is John Stuart Curry, another regionalist painter who produced a famous painting. Most school kids around this neck of the woods know it, the portrait of John Brown in the Kansas State House, fiery, scary, the whole thing. He's from Dunavant, yeah. Kansas. Okay.
That was one of the last places I went to. I visited every single one of these towns.
I know you did. Yeah.
I had never been there, and partly because I had read that it was a ghost town. There was virtually nothing there. And finally, you know, a couple of years ago, I was over in Lawrence. You know, University Press of Kansas has published this book. And found out where it was. It was a little bit hard to find, and there's just a few houses around there. There's nothing much, at least, that would indicate there was ever a town there. But a guy took me out in the field and showed me where the railroad tracks had used to be. So that was truly a ghost town, and I have a picture of the field out there, and unless you knew what you were looking for, you would not find it.
Wow. You know, say for their time in these small towns, John, do you think these men would have been as successful as they were if they hadn't had that connection with a small town somewhere?
You know, that's a very good question. It's a debatable question. I think the kinds of opportunities they had to experiment, you know, like Sam Walton, we were just talking about, all the different kinds of businesses, you know, yeah. delivering newspapers and so forth. The opportunities in a small town to interact with older people, find out, you know, what they were like, to be involved in different kinds of activities and so forth, probably gave them a head start on guys who would have grown up in that suburb of Chicago that I lived in or the big city. But I am certainly not saying that only small town boys are capable of doing that, because community can be found everywhere. It's just a little harder to create it in Kansas City or Independence or Monette. Or in a big city than it is in a small town like Monette or the towns that these boys grew up in.
Well, John Miller, again, author of many books, his latest book, Small Town Dreams, Stories of Midwestern Boys Who Shaped America. He'll be speaking tonight at 6:30 at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch, 14 West 10th Street. You can RSVP to grab a seat, kclibrary.org. John, what a pleasure to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thanks, Steve.
Good to have you. You bet.